17 minutes past 8. Welcome back to Sabah and Muslim Drive Time on Radio Islam International. South Africa is in the middle of an economic and political crisis. The rand has shed nearly 15% of its value against the dollar this year. It's pressured, like other emerging economic currencies, by slowing growth in China, the world's second biggest economy. Another blow to South Africa's economy was the news that the gross domestic product had shrunk 1.3% in the second quarter of this year. Three consecutive quarters of contraction, as we know, define a recession. Then we had the news of a petrol price cut, but the country still seems to be grappling with the three-headed monster of a weak currency, failing commodity prices, and a contracting economy. Together with this, we have unabated and continuous and sustained political controversies and political scandals in the country. The link between the economy and politics, that is something that comes to the fore every now and again. And joining us this morning on the line to have this discussion about the economy, about politics and the links between the two, we have political analyst Nick Borain, and we have Jackie Cilliers, Executive Director and Head of African Futures and Innovation at the Institute for Security Studies. Nick, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you, good morning to Yaki, and good morning to your listeners.
Jackie, thank you so much for your time, much appreciated, good morning and welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, and may I reciprocate as Nick said.
Okay, Nick, let's start with you. What on earth is happening in China?
Well, Chinese growth has, I suppose, gone through the natural cycle of, as most quick-growing large economies have, which is that it's focused on, I suppose, ultimately gathering together the savings of the agricultural sector, building small industry, growing quickly into large industry. That burgeoning, it's a huge country, and as those industries grow, have sucked raw materials from throughout the world, and over a 20-year period, what became known as the commodity super cycle has priced those minerals and pushed their prices up throughout the world, which has been an underlying a baseline for South African growth because of how central those minerals are and the export of those are to our economy.
Now, Jackie, in your opinion, with retrospect and hindsight, did South Africa make the right decision getting into such a tight and close relationship with China?
Well, you know, from a foreign policy perspective, membership of the BRICS is a huge achievement for South Africa, probably the biggest achievement that the Zuma administration has managed in foreign policy terms. But we are playing in the big league, and we are a very small economy. And I think the question at the moment that is also in the newspapers is South Africa paying an economic price for the political decision to hitch itself to these big guys? We are a very different we are in a very different league to our BRIC partners, but certainly it has political advantages. But I think that the current economic challenges that South Africa faces really are not a function of our membership or thereof of the BRICS. It's really an issue of global cycles and mismanagement of the South African economy and these winds, these headwinds are really providing us with significant domestic challenges and you know, a succession of poor and incoherent policy choices that have been made over successive years have all, in a sense, come home to roost.
Mm. Nick, this issue of global cycles, it's many are arguing that it's not only about China. China being the second biggest economy plays a big part in what happens to economies across the globe, but it's about more than this China. Would you agree?
Certainly it is more than about Chinese growth. I would say, let me just say this though, we're a tiny economy. In the age of globalization, sovereignty for small countries like us is actually very diminished. Our ability to make economic decisions is very tightly circumscribed by our major trading partners. The decisions we have made have been almost, I don't want to be overstate this, have been almost uniformly poor. We've fought the electricity crisis, the policy package that we've pushed at mining, the fact that we've tried to get mining to subsidize domestic growth, I could go on. The labor strikes, which are not a policy issue, but have certainly been a turnoff for a lot of the investors. So we've done our bit, but in a way, our bit has been overdetermined by Chinese growth. Yes, the crisis in Europe. You look at our major trading partners, and there's major crises, and that has contributed very significantly to the pain that we are experiencing. We have made the pain worse by a whole range of bad choices. I agree with Jackie on that completely.
Now, Jackie, you spoke there about mismanagement of the South African economy. When did it start? The media seems to be focusing on the current administration, and one can understand. They are sitting on the seat of power as we speak. But there are those who say you've got to go back. You've got to go back right to the time of Mandela and especially the time of Mbeki.
I would generally agree with that. I think there are things that we have control over and there are things we don't have control over. Let's first start with, I think being fair is the point that in 2008 when President Zuma took over from President Mbeki, the global economic environment, which had been very facilitating towards South Africa, we had a tailwind. That changed into an economic headwind, and since he's come into power, President Zuma has faced economic headwinds. But as Nick says, what has happened is that we have really shot ourselves in the foot with decisions on electricity, on a variety of areas that reflect an absence of coherence in foreign policy. Now, an example of the first is, of course, during the Mbeki administration, we decided that the private sector is going to bail South Africa out of a looming electricity challenge. And no investment was made, and this was carried on with the Zuma administration until we now have a cap on growth that the Minister of Finance says we can't grow faster than 2%. If we can't grow faster than 2%, it means unemployment increases, inequality increases, and we generally are not keeping up with our population growth. But an example, a more recent example of the policy incoherence that we see is, for example, the spat that we have on migration, where the Deputy President is now required to mediate between colleagues in Cabinet on migration. Mm. And we seem to believe that particularly skilled migration is bad for growth. Skilled migration is exactly the opposite. It is good for growth. But we just make things as difficult as possible. Instead of really focusing on, absolutely focusing on doing our best to facilitate growth, facilitate competitiveness in the South African economy. And there we only have ourselves to blame.
Nick, your thoughts on the big debate internally here in South Africa as to whether trade unions should take the bulk of the blame or capital should take the bulk of the blame. It's an ongoing debate. It comes out in the form of comments from Zwelinzi Mavavi, the different trade unions, the EFF, and then you've got the likes of AfriForum and the others, you know, speaking possibly with a different perspective on it.
I don't know if that one's directed at me, but we're taking turns, so I'll go with that one. Look, you know, we have a particular, historically, the capitalism that got formed in South Africa, particularly in the mining sector, had a particular reliance on cheap black labor. And I think was a highly exploitative form of capitalism. Of course, there's been much more exploitative forms in Victorian England, children down the mines carrying 2 tons of coal every day with a life expectancy of 12 years old. But we have built an economy that was based on cheap black labor. And we've been moving away from that from almost 1960, but we have not moved away sufficiently. So you've got a trade union movement that comes out in 1985, which is when COSATU was formed out of previous unions like FOSATU, which was another federation. But it's a struggle union. They're fighting apartheid, and they're rewarded by the ANC when they come to power with a set of laws that make it easier for them when they sit down to negotiate higher wages, that basically strengthens their hand. the what you've got to understand about trade unions is they are sectional interests. I don't want to be ugly, but they're a gang. They're a gang who all want to get the best that they can for their members out of the system. Our trade unions are not sophisticated enough generally, and I have an exception here, to say, okay, well, let's think about the industry that is going down the tubes here and make a deal with government and with the employer to try and protect the industry so we protect our jobs. Well, the exception is NUMSA. You know, this is the most radical, the most left-wing of the unions that is clearly sitting down in that spirit with the steel sector, and is trying to come up with a deal of some kind that will save the steel sector. So, look, the unions, who's at fault, business or the unions? Increasingly, you know, we're moving away from that era of capitalism that was reliant on cheap black labor. I think it's still tainted by that, but by and large, we've moved away from that era. The system by which business and labor sit down and negotiate is what's broken. You can't blame either of those parties. They've got to. Business has got to cut costs. Labor's got to get better deals for its members. The system is breaking down and leading to strikes.
Now, Jackie, the issue of political parties and how they interpret matters pertaining to the economy, as is expected in almost any country, you would have opposition parties criticizing the government's stance and approach and policies, and then government defending that, the ruling party defending that. But do you get the sense in South Africa that maybe this issue about the economy and the political postulations by the different political parties have made it somewhat over-politicized, and that makes it more difficult to tackle the challenges constructively? Jackie?
Yes. I didn't hear my name in the beginning. I don't think so. I think what government is not doing is paying sufficient attention to creating a common narrative on the need to grow the economy. I think that the impression that I certainly have at the moment is that we have a government that is sort of in the one side a kind of a coalition, very large coalition cabinet to hold all the various factions together. And all the attention is being given to tactics, to petty politics, to keeping the coalition going, and that insufficient attention and leadership and vision is being given to how to grow the economy. So, you know, political inclusion drives economic inclusion. So you can't, I can't say that, you know, one just needs to focus on the economy and get the economy right, because the reason why the economy is not growing is because we don't have a consensus within the country and leadership and vision on how to move the country forward. So economics and politics and our social relations are all intimately related. But I mean, we are discussing the economy this morning. So what I think many of us feel is lacking is a sense of leadership and direction in the economy. We have nominally the National Development Plan, but the government is not implementing the recommendations in the National Development Plan. Whether you agree with it or not, there doesn't seem to be that focus on what it is that is required to grow the economy. And as we all agree, if we don't manage to become more competitive, to grow the economy, then the current focus on redistribution and transformation become very disruptive, because when you try and redistribute and on the basis of existing instead of a growing pot, you have to take from somewhere. I'm simplifying, but it all boils down to vision and to leadership and to changing our discourse in the country to an inclusive discourse of where South Africa wants to go as a single nation, not as a race-based nation, but as a country that really tries to deal with its challenges. I think for me, that's really where the main challenge is a leadership and a governance and a management challenge to focus. We now have a crisis, for example, in the in one sector of our economy, and then that sort of spurs some action by government. But you know, it really takes a crisis to get any movement or action from government, which seems to be entirely focused on internal politics.
Nick, with regards to what opposition parties are putting on the table in terms of economic policies, do you think they are viable if South Africans, by and large, have a change of heart and say, look, we need inspiring leadership and we need different policies. The ANC's policies are not going to cut it. We are going to vote DA or we are going to vote EFF. Will it save the economy?
Look, if you take the ANC's National General Council discussion documents, except for some, frankly, quite lunatic statements in their that relate to BRICS and China and the Communist Party of China, these are mostly very good documents, particularly the first one, that I think that with a little compromise talks to the centre, and the DA, I think, would, for example, be in the centre with the ANC on many, many of the economic policies they're proposing, and that the centre is now occupied by the huge majority of parties that generally support the NDP, and I've put COPE and UDM in that in there as well. Obviously, the EFF is the outlier, arguing that for a very radical and immediate redistribution of the key assets of land and mines and other and banks and other. Now that is, you know, obviously that is something that has to be entertained and discussed in our politics. But again, those are policies that will never work, that will beggar the economy very, very quickly. But basically, everyone is in agreement. The centre is occupied by almost everybody. The NDP is ticked by almost everybody, and I've got to agree with Yaki. And this has been the case since Jacob Zuma came to power in 2009. This is an extraordinarily weak president. And for all the noise and kandla and corruption and rubbish and all of the verbal that we've heard, policy-wise, this is a very weak president. He's held a very soft center. He doesn't come up with policies that says, okay, this is where we're going. He has cabinet meetings where people report, and he said, and he mumbles and says, yeah, well, that's great, and let's carry on. But whereas, in fact, we're facing a very profound crisis that requires not a micromanaged look at different sectors. It requires an overall strategic approach to the crisis, because it is a crisis. And Jacob Zuma has singularly failed and continues to fail to provide that coherent center. I think partly because he doesn't understand it, and partly because it's his style of leadership, right from the start, was to dispense patronage, to pay back the guys who had supported him, and allow them collectively, and remember, I think many of these groups have got quite contradictory interests. He's given them different ministries, the DTI, the Department of Economic Development, the Treasury. So we've got people pulling off in different directions under a presidency who thinks keeping peace is within his cabinet is the same as keeping the country together. And I think we're faced with a crisis that requires a very decisive and clear response.
On that point, Nick, do you think that it would have been in the interest of South Africa for Mbeki to have been in power right now? He was always assumed and perceived to be very strong on economic issues and economic policies, although he earned the ire of the trade unions, and he was seen as too heavy-handed in the way he pushed these policies through. In terms of a crisis like now, would he have been the ideal man to be at the helm?
Is that Yaki or me?
Nico, a follow-up on what you were saying earlier on.
Okay, no, good. Yeah, I think Thabo Mbeki was great in the moment that we faced the debt crisis and of 1996 and the world that the new South Africa was born into, with the fiscal austerity, with the independent monetary policy, and with a whole range of policies that angered the left. And I have no doubt, if you look at it carefully, he was moving towards a position where he wanted the ANC to govern as the ANC and the other parts of the alliance to go their separate ways. Not their separate ways, but to stand on their own feet separately. And I think ultimately that's what brought him down, because the Communist Party didn't like that. Obviously were threatened by that, and then back Zuma. I think that's ultimately what happened. But that was a crisis management strategy. He was basically paying off apartheid debts. You might say, well, why the hell did he do that? Well, no one would have lent us any money again if we hadn't. So we lived with austerity. We're paying for some of that austerity, for example, with Eskom. And for a long time, there was an underinvestment in infrastructure. And then there was a whole lot of other mistakes that Thabo Mbeki made, that it's difficult to say that this guy would have handled this situation fine. Remember, it's a different ANC. It's a much more... that was an ANC that could sit down and make a decision and stick to it. I think it became an ANC that fell apart eventually because it couldn't stick to it in the end, and expelled Mbeki. And since then, I don't think we have an ANC that is able to coherently focus on this problem and pull together like a unit that existed previously.
Jackie, Cyril Ramaphosa, on his return from Japan, or in Japan, recently made comments to the effect that, look, South Africa will get through this. So we faced similar challenges in 08, and we came through it. Are you optimistic?
Well, we just released a long-term forecast on the South African economy, this time looking out to 2035, South African futures 2035. We factored into our forecasting the cap on growth as a result of government incoherence and bad policy, which we've been discussing, as well as the electricity crisis. But over time, you know, the many things that the ANC have done, particularly under Jacob Zuma, have gotten wrong. But in general, since 1994, ANC government have invested in long-term human capital improvement. And this, over time, translates into significant growth potential. So we are sort of saying that the next 4 or 5 years are going to be tough. They're going to be tough until we settle particularly the presidential succession issue from 2007 to 17 to 2019, because we have a successor to Zuma appointed in 17 and only elections in 2019. And that gap and so on and so forth are going to exacerbate political turmoil. Coupled with the cap on growth with electricity, I think we're heading for quite difficult times for the next 4 or 5 years. But after that, beyond that, the structural drivers of growth in South Africa remain relatively healthy. I don't want to say if government, but if government can take a facilitating a role, and we can work on getting labor, government, and business facing in the same direction, prospects for South Africa are positive. They are not bright. We will continue to grow slower than the rest of Africa, but we have a huge apartheid deficit that we need to make up for, because that legacy is not, you know, is, it requires investment to overcome the legacies in education, water, sanitation, and so on and so forth. But government has been investing in those deficits, and over time, our modeling will indicate that we forecast an average growth rate of about 3.5% out to 2035. Which is about South Africa's average growth rate. But the point, of course, is that is completely insufficient to deal with South Africa's unemployment, inequality, and poverty. We really need almost revolutionary in thinking about policy and implementation in South Africa if we are going to significantly deal with our structural unemployment, poverty, and inequality in this country.
Jackie Cilliers and Nick Borain, thank you both for your time this morning. Much appreciated. It was a very enlightening discussion.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day. Go on.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was political analyst Nick Borain and Jackie Cilliers, Executive Director and Head of African Futures and Innovation at the Institute for Security Studies, talking to us this morning about the economy. 18:29, we go for a quick break, latest news headlines. After that, we pay the bills.